Parsha. Okay, we're going to have a quick class on Chanukah. So Chanukah is the eighth holiday we say Shechiyonu on, meaning the Torah gives us Rosh Hashanah, that's the Oraita, we say Shechiyonu on Rosh Hashanah. The Torah gives us Yom Kippur, we say Shechiyonu on Yom Kippur. The Torah gives us Sukkot, we say Shechiyonu on Sukkot. The Torah gives us Shmini Atzeret, we say Shechiyonu on Shmini Atzeret. The Torah gives us Pesach, we say Shechiyonu on Pesach. The Torah gives us Shavuos, we say Shechiyonu on Shavuos. So all that is Doraita, that's six. Then the rabbis added Purim, which is seven. We make the Shechiyonu on the Megillah, which we say should also encompass Chanukah. And Chanukah is the eighth and final holiday. The message of Chanukah, says the Gra in his commentary on Megillat Esther. Mashal lemadavar domeh, he quotes the following medrash. There was a young prince whose father kept warning him that if he keeps messing up, he's going to banish him from the kingdom. And the prince kept messing up. And the father kept saying, you have to behave. I'm not going to put up with this. Until finally, the father said, I've had it. And so he took the prince and he sent him out into a forest. And he said, you're going to have to make do on your own. You can't inherit the kingdom with this type of behavior. And the prince said, please, Dad, you can't do this to me. I'm your son. And he said, I know, but I kept warning you. And if you don't behave like this, I don't want you to inherit my kingdom. You have to learn how to behave. And he says, but Dad, I'm your son. He says, right, and you have to learn a lesson. That's it. You're not inheriting the kingdom. You have to fend for yourself. And the kid is begging and pleading. His father says, Gamarnu, you've had enough chances. So he takes him out into a forest and he keeps riding way beyond the kid can recognize anything. And finally, they're so deep in the forest, the kid figures there's no way he's going to get out. And then the father drops him off in the forest and says, you're on your own, and turns around the chariot and runs away. And the kid's there, and it's the late afternoon, it's starting to drizzle, and he's really upset. How am I going to manage? And as he's there in the rain, he suddenly hears a noise. He looks at it in the bushes, and he sees a few cubs. So that's cute, a few cubs. And then he hears a noise behind him, and the mother bear comes. And the mother bear comes, and she's very upset that someone's by her cubs. And he knows he's finished, so he figures he better make a run for it. So he's running and running, and he hears the bear behind him, and he knows he can't outrun a bear, but he might as well try. So he's running, and he hears the bear. And finally, he realizes the bear's about to catch him, so he makes one final leap and yells as he feels the bear breathing on his back. And as he leaps into the bush, the bear, he's with his head down yelling. He's sure the bear is going to pounce on him and destroy him. And he's yelling, ah, right? And the pounce just doesn't come. And the bear doesn't pounce on him. And he's there with his head down, and he, after about 20, 30 seconds of yelling and realizing he's still alive, he turns around to see that the bear was shot by a knight. In the last second, as the bear was about to destroy him, a knight came by and shot the bear arrow after arrow after arrow, and then took his axe and hacked the bear's head off. And there's the bear, dead, at his feet. And the knight, he goes, Mister! And the knight's already riding off away from him, and he's left all alone. And he says, wait a second, wait, you don't know who I am. And the knight isn't listening. And he starts running after the knight, and he sees the knight on the horse riding out into the sunset, and he's gone. So the kid looks at the dead bear on the ground, and he says, wow, what luck. Just as I was about to be dead, the knight showed up and saved my life. And the kid is sitting there, and he figures, wow, that's amazing. I can't believe my luck. And he starts dissecting the bear. He figures that's going to be dinner. And he has to take the cloth, the hide is going to be his coverage from the elements. And as he's in the process of preparing himself for the night, he looks up and he sees the king's advisor, the king's top advisor. And he says, well, I'm so happy you're here. And the advisor says, yes, so am I. And the kid says, are you going to help me get out of here? And the advisor says, no, I came here to kill you. So the kid says, why? He says, I've always wanted to ensure the king has no heir, and now's my chance. I'm going to make sure that the king has no heir, and I get the throne. The kid says, you're kidding. He says, no, I'm not, and he draws his sword. So the kid starts running from him, and he's running, and the advisor's running after him. And he hides behind one tree, and the king comes, and the advisor comes there and back, and he's running this way and that way, and he keeps running, and he figures this time maybe he has a chance, until finally he's cornered. And he's looking up, and the advisor starts approaching with a sword. And he's looking, and he looks at something to throw at him, and he's got nothing there but leaves, and he can't figure anything out. And then the advisor comes approaching him, and he lifts his sword, and he realizes that in a second he's dead. So he lifts his hands to protect himself, whatever he can do, and he's shutting his eyes in fear. And nothing happens. And he waits a second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and nothing happens. He looks up, and there's the advisor also shot with an arrow. And the king's knight comes riding up with an axe, hacks his head off. And he's looking at him, and he says, "Mister, wait, I want to talk to you." And the guy runs off. He says, "Wow, that was real luck. I was dead." And then he says, "Oh no, this isn't luck. This is my father. Even though he put me in the forest, he's keeping an eye on me. I'm not all alone in the forest. If every time I'm almost finished, a knight shows up," says the Gra, "that's the message of Purim and Hanukkah. When we were in the darkest times and Hashem showed up and saved the day in the story of Purim and then saved the day again in the story of Hanukkah, that was to give us the koach to continue further. And all my life I did not understand why we celebrate Hanukkah. And I had to give speeches here as rabbi and I didn't know what I was talking about. I will be honest with you. Until this year I had this burning question inside me." So you learn the halacha and you learn the gemara, and I had this burning question I couldn't find an answer to. And that was, why do we celebrate Hanukkah? So I saw, there's the Psikta Rav Kahana that says we celebrate because Hanukkah HaMizbeach. And there's the Gemara that says we celebrate because we won the Greeks. And then there's the Gemara that says that, the Rambam that says the kingdom returned time. So, and all this was amazing to me. But I still didn't understand why we were celebrating Hanukkah. Because the Gemara says we stopped celebrating all celebrations of Bayit Sheni when the Second Temple was destroyed. Because what are you celebrating for? Everything that you accomplished was destroyed with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So I couldn't figure out why Hanukkah was any different. What am I celebrating in Hanukkah? And then this year, it dawned on me. Because the Levush, who was the disciple of the Rama, who wrote a Shulchan Aruch with an intention to outdo the Shulchan Aruch, that his is going to be the new Shulchan Aruch. So the Levush writes, why do we call it Chanu? Chanu comes from the word they camped. Chanu v'esau, Chanu v'esau. They camped and traveled. So they realized they had come to a camping. So when I read that Levush, I said, wait a second. What did the Levush just mean? The Levush meant they came to a camping knowing they're going to travel again. Meaning, Am Yisrael, who learned the book of Daniel and understood there were going to be four kingdoms, realized that with the conclusion of the Greek Empire, they had reached a chanu, we can rest, but they also realized the temple is going to be destroyed. As it says in Zechariah and in Ezra, the Navi Zechariah tells them, we're going to build the second temple, which will be destroyed. They knew the second temple was limited. They knew the second Beit HaMikdash was finite. They knew there was going to be a fourth kingdom. So when they came to celebrate the defeat of the Greeks, they said, great, we have a pause. But they knew it was a pause. They knew that they were going to have the Roman Empire or Fourth Empire. It's Yaakov Avinu, Avram Avinu, and from the time of Daniel, we have the prophecy of Daniel that there's going to be a fourth kingdom. So that means, and that's what we say in the Ma'oz Tzur. The Ma'oz Tzur really begins and ends with current events. Ma'oz Tzur begins, you Hashem are the rock of our strength, who we hope we'll rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Very interesting. The Edom, Esav, is called the dog. Right? That's why in Moses' Tzur he's called Tsar, the enemy. Hamnabeach, that's barking. Right? We're insinuating he's a dog. And that's because Esav, or Amalek, is referred to as Az. Az means he's brazen and he holds on to his anger. And that's Esav's hallmark. That it says in the Colosseums in Rome, they used to celebrate Christmas. How did they celebrate Christmas? They'd have this procession. They would bring in an old man with a limp and a young man who was a big warrior. And the young man who was a big warrior would get on the old man's back and sit on him and ride across the Colosseum, and everyone would applaud. So the Gemara says, what are they saying? The old man with the limp is Yaakov Avinu, and the young man who's all strong is Esav. You're talking about for a millennium. Almost 2 millennium after Yaakov and Esav. I'm saying they're still discussing that fight? Yeah, they knew what it said in the Tanakh about the fight between Yaakov and Esav holds on to it. And that's the famous story about the Nuremberg trials, and that's the famous line. There are many lines that Nazis said to Jews that showed that they had studied what we were all about. Now, one of the biggest moments of chizuk I had was when I read what Hitler wrote, that if we eradicate the Jews, but there's one little baby Jew who we miss. That little baby Jew, even though he has no surrounding and no family and no education, has a spark within him that will arouse that weakness that we call a conscience in the world, and he can undo everything we are trying to build. And when I read that and I said, he understood what a pintalayit is. He understood what a spark of a Jew is. So he saw conscience as a weakness. But you see what he writes, like that blew me away, that he said, if we finish everyone off, but we leave one Jew, and even if he has no education, but he's different, and he's going to grow up to be different, and he will bring the world back to morals and values and things that, the world thinks is a strength, but we really know, he writes, is a weakness. It's the conscience of the world. That's what, how he called the Jews, the conscience of the world. Says they're the ones who keep teaching the world. They have to be nice and kind and gentle and considerate, and it's and he was against that, right? So coming back to here, so we call Esav. Esav is the Az, the brazen one, the one who bears a grudge, the one who never forgives or never forgets. And that's how we begin the Mosor. How do we end the Mosor? Chasof Zera Kochecha. We conclude with the fourth kingdom. But that's really what Mosor takes us through. It goes from Mitzrayim to the Bavel Paras Madai to Hanukkah to the current state. And that's really what we're celebrating in Hanukkah, because Pesach is the conclusion of the Egyptian Empire, and that's Pesach. Shavuos is we accept the Torah. Purim is the conclusion of the Babylonian Persian Mede Empire, Paras Madai Bavel, and Hanukkah is the conclusion of the Greek Empire. So people always like to say Yom Ha'atzmaut is the end of, but it's not. We still have the Edom and Yishmael Empire. We're not done. I mean, we hope we're in the right place and on the right path, and we're getting there. But that's the mark, and that's why Hanukkah is important, because Hanukkah is the end of the Greek Empire. And what the Roman Empire would do is a new problem, meaning the Greek Empire ended with Hanukkah. So Hanukkah is, we've come to a pause. Now, on Hanukkah, really every day is its own holiday. Mashal ema davar domeh. What is this similar to? A husband wants to do something special for his wife. They have their anniversary coming up. So a week before the anniversary, he shows up, and on day one, he gives her a little gift in a nice box. So what does she do? She's smart. She puts it on the brake front. Day two, he gives her another gift. Day three, another gift. And so until the eighth day, the day of their anniversary. So then she looks at the eight gifts lined up, and she says, wow, you gave me eight gifts. And he says, no, every day I gave you a gift. She says, right, but a total date. She says, right, a total date, fine. But she says, you gave me eight gifts. She says, right, I gave you eight gifts. But I gave you each day was special. That's the message of Hanukkah. That's why on Hanukkah, we make a bracha shasanisim every day. Because really, each day was its own nes. And that's why Chazal, when they instituted, I never understood this. Why did Chazal make, you don't find it anywhere else, one candle? Now what, I never understood why Beis Shammai say, go from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5 to 4. Why? Right? What's the logic in that, corresponding to the days that are going out? But if you understand that what's really happening here is we're saying there were eight distinct separate miracles. Every day we had to come and relight the menorah, and every day suddenly we had a new miracle where the menorah stayed lit. The fact that it happened yesterday doesn't mean it'll happen today. There's no guarantee, there's no logic here, right? So you light it, and wow, it stayed lit. It's a new wow today. It's not the. Yesterday it did it, so today it'll do it. No, there's no logical reason it should have done it yesterday. There's no logical reason it should have done it today. In the end, we look back and say, Hashem held us through these 8 days till we finally got pure oil. The eight is an added point. It's not the main point. The main point is, today there was a miracle. Now that's a very important point, going back to our theme about Hanukkah. With the knowledge that Hanukkah would end, so one of the messages we learn, and we learn this from Yosef, and we learn from Yaakov, and it's a recurring theme in Tanakh, and that is the theme of Carpe Diem. Capture the day. Very often, we sit there thinking, you know what, tomorrow is going to happen. I have a friend whose wife was diagnosed with cancer 9-10 years ago. And they know they didn't cure it. And every few years, comes up, it spreads to another place, and they fight it. I marvel at how these people celebrate life. These are people that know the clock is ticking. See, there's a facade. We're sitting here and every one of us thinks the clock's not ticking, right? But when a person has a diagnosis, so they know their clock is ticking. Rav Pesin Zatzal was diagnosed with Parkinson's and a heart condition. And he was sitting at the doctor's office, and a neighbor of mine came over and said, oh, I feel so bad for you. And I heard about this at that neighbor's shiva when Rav Pesin's wife came to me and said to me, we sat in the doctor's office together, and he was telling telling us, he feels bad for us. Now we're at his Shiva, right? So he thought their clock's ticking, right? Rav Pesin was diagnosed with Parkinson's. So yeah, 9 years later, he passed away from it. But he had those 9 years, whereas my neighbor, a half a year later, passed away. Right? But he didn't know his clock was ticking. We don't, you know, we ignore it. That's a famous story of the Gra, that his sister came to visit after he hadn't seen her for years, and he walked out and he spent a minute or two with her, and then he said, okay, it was nice seeing you. And she said, we only spent 2 minutes together. And the story goes, he grabbed his white beard and he says, you see this? You see it's white? She said, yeah. He said, it's the last reminder they're giving me from Shemayim that I'm going to die soon. I don't have time, but it was nice seeing you. And turned around and went back to life. But it's an important, you know, whether these stories are real or not, they're an important story, right? So coming back to Chanukah, this is a recurring theme Chazal teach us, to capture what we have. Meaning you could spend the time worrying about what tomorrow will bring, and then you don't have today either. And what these people are doing is they're saying, hey, I have today, that's amazing. And that's one of the bottom line themes of Koheles, where Shlomo HaMelech says there's a lot to accomplish, but there's also the advantage of accomplishing today. I mean, very often we destroy whole eras of our life out of worry about what will be at the end of the era. There's a beautiful story my mother brought me up on. Chaim was walking back and forth, pacing. He couldn't go to sleep. So finally, his wife gets up and she says, it's 11:30 at night, Chaim, why aren't you going to sleep? So he says, well, tomorrow morning I owe rent. And Yankel, my landlord downstairs, how am I going to see him at davening? I don't have rent for him. And what am I going to say? So she says, what's your pacing going to accomplish? You don't have the rent. You have no way to pay him. So Chaim says, yeah, that's why I'm worried. So she says, okay. She goes, Yankel! Yeah. Yankel, you hear me? Yeah. So she goes, Yankel, we don't have the rent money. We're not paying you tomorrow morning. Good night. And she goes, Chaim, now come to sleep. you're not going to sleep because you're worried about it. Okay, I just told him. Now come to sleep. So sometimes we destroy the night because we're worried about tomorrow. You're not laughing, I know, because you're the landlord. But he's my landlord. Well, he used to be my landlord. It's a very important theme that you can destroy tonight's sleep because of what's going to be tomorrow morning. Then you didn't get tonight's sleep. You got punished twice, right? Hanukkah comes and says, we had a golden era. We had 2 centuries of a golden era. Yes, it ended in destruction, and they knew it would end in destruction. And that's what the name Chanukah alludes to. That's why it's Chanu, which means we've come to a camping before the next journey. They knew full well, and that goes back to the Gra we began with, that the theme of Chanukah is the idea that if you guys are leaving, can you give us 3 minutes? Yeah? Wait, no. I'll tell you what we need. That's one of the great themes of Chanukah, the idea of taking the time to camp, even if we know what's yet to come, being able to camp now. And also the dual theme of lighting one. Basically, you did your mitzvah if you lit one candle, because tonight was a nace. Tomorrow's nace is tomorrow's nace, and last night's nace was last night, but you lit one. And that explains Beis Shammai, because technically, the greatness is I look at it and I say, I had 8 nights of miracles. It's an added point to the miracle. It's not the main point. The main point was tonight Hashem gave us a miracle. Sometimes we lose the point because we have 8 days. Chazal said, take one. Light one candle because tonight was a miracle. Then Chazal said, okay, tomorrow night, it's a little bit bigger. And that's the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai say, start off by recognizing you're going to have 8 days of miracles coming. You want to do Ma'adrin min Ma'adrin? Start off the Yom Tov and show, I'm going to have 8 days. It's like the husband saying, here, I have 8 gifts I'm going to give you, and here's one. Here are the 8. Now there are 7 left. Now there are 6 left. Beis Hillel say, well, today it was lit. Tomorrow it was lit, and now it became a bigger nace because you had 2 days running, so now we light 2. I'm just saying, once we understand this dual perspective of a set of 8, where the main theme is today, and then tomorrow it's again today, it's not about the series. The series is an added point. Then we can understand Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel better. Yes, sir.
What's the connection between Chanukah and Sukkot? Because Beit Shammai gives us a reason of the offering on Sukkot.
So in one of the book of Maccabees, we have different books of Maccabees. And the book of the Maccabees are sometimes called, among the halachic commentaries, Sefarim Chitzonim, which might be translated as the Apocrypha. Yes? Apocrypha, thank you. It says in the Gemara, in Tractate Sanhedrin, and it says in the Shulchan Aruch, in Yerideon, the Laws of Learning Torah. And we learned this in class about a half a year ago. You could see a full class online on this. That you're not supposed to study Sefarim Chitzonim. You're not supposed to study the Apocrypha. Thank you. I always get it wrong. But maybe by the end of tonight I'll get it right. The Talmud explains the reason behind it being that there are themes in the Apocrypha that are underlying themes that you might not notice, that are against the way of the Torah. For example, the Talmud quotes from Ben Sira, that in the book of Ben Sira it says, if you see a person with a beard that goes this way, split into two, what the Talmud calls Zaldekan, someone whose beard is a split, so then that's a sign that he is the most conniving person in the world. You have to be very careful from him, because he's always pulling at his beard, plotting against people. He's doing this. So the Talmud says, you see, that's a silly thing in the book of Ben Sira. You're going to read it like a part of Tanakh. Not everything there is smart. And then the Talmud gives us a few more examples of that. And the Rishonim write that the bottom line theme that the Talmud's alluding to is that when you read Ben Sira, you might not notice, but there's an underlying theme that says that the way you develop is predetermined. If you have a beard like this, it's predetermined that you'll be a conniving person. That's an underlying theme you might not have noticed as you read the book. And that's what the Talmud's saying. It's not innocent nonsense. It's nonsense that has underlying themes that are antithetical to Torah. And that's why the Talmud says not to read it. So then you open up the Shulchan Aruch. And here, we won't go through the full thing unless you guys want. We could have a whole class. Did we do this on Shavuos night? Or is this on the agenda for next year? What are Sefarim Chitzonim? I think we did it Shavuos night. We did Shavuos night, right? So we went through Shulchan Aruch and Kra on that. This year we're going to do on sorcery, Bezrat Hashem. What is Kishuf? Does it work? What's permitted, prohibited? That's one of the topics for Shavuos night. At any rate, for those of you who don't show up to Machon Meir, we're having a whole series already, weeks on this topic in Machon Meir, but those of you who can't get that, you'll get the short version on Shavuos night, Bezrat Hashem. And if this is tempting you to come, you should know you're missing out, because the full version of what we're doing in Machon Meir is far better than what you'll get here in Shavuos night. So you are cordially invited to come to Machon Meir Thursday night to our learning. Coming back to, we come out, what?
Is it not recorded?
It is recorded. But you didn't listen to it yet, and it's been recorded for 2 months already. So you see, the fact that it's on the web amongst 15,000 other shiurim doesn't help us. We move on. I'm saying it's there, okay.
What do you recommend for us?
Oh, it's an interesting one. So coming back to the idea of the book of the Maccabees. So it's one of them. And technically, we would say, why would we read them? So I asked Rav Nevenzel, because it says in Halacha that we don't waste our time reading the Sefarim Chitzonim. So I said to him, what does he say about the book of the Maccabees? So he said, that's the one of the bunch that you should read. So I said, why? So he said, because when you read it, you'll have a greater appreciation for all the miracles that happened on Hanukkah. If you don't read it, you don't know. If you read it, you start understanding all the wonderful things that happened on Hanukkah. So then he added a nice caveat. He said, but you got to be careful, because it was probably written by Karaites or Sadducees. It was written by people who did not respect our tradition of Chazal. Now, I didn't know, because I thought it was written by early Christians, and he said no. He said the Christians worked hard to canonize it. The Christians were, it was very important to them to say that the Apocrypha was a part of Tanakh, because the Christians didn't want to accept our tradition that prophecy ended with the beginning of the Second Temple era. They wanted to argue that prophecy continued so that they can say that their man was a prophet. We said prophecy ended for 2 centuries before his time. It ended with the beginning of the Second Temple. They wanted to argue that. So in order to argue that, they said, no. The Apocrypha is a proof. There are more books to Tanakh. And we say, no, that's not Tanakh. But they argued it in order to be able to promote their claim that he was a prophet. Now coming back to say the book of the Maccabees. So I thought, I had once heard
that the Book of the Maccabees was written by early Christians. He said he doesn't think so. He thinks it was written by Sadducees, people who did not respect our tradition, but not by early Christians. And he recommended, he said, read it with an open eye, recognizing that what they're writing is not necessarily 100% accurate. They might have some agenda. Part of it stems from their perspective. But at the end of the day, he did recommend reading it. So coming back to your question, so in the Book of the Maccabees, it says that, I had to introduce why I opened it. So in the Book of the Maccabees, it says that they instituted Hanukkah because they could not celebrate Sukkot that year. They missed 8 days of Sukkot, so they said, once we can re-inaugurate the Beit HaMikdash, we will set up a holiday. Shkoyach. Toda rabba. It had some money on it, yeah? Shkoyach. Toda rabba. For those of you who don't know, Sukkot and Pesach time, you can buy these for a 6% discount. You have a minimum, you have to buy a certain amount. So it's recommended. And the rest of the year, you could buy it for a 3% discount, and if you pay with certain credit cards, you get 3% back from the credit card company. So you get the same 6%. It's just worth knowing.
When you go to buy it, they don't let you use the... they don't count it as...
on that credit card. But if I'm not mistaken, I checked this out this week, I'll be smarter in a month. If you use the Ashmoret credit card, if you use their credit card, then you won't get it back.
Right.
But if you use an Ashmoret credit card, Ashmoret gives you 3%, then you're not beat
down.
Is
an Israeli credit card that has 3%?
Yeah. Oh, it's called Ashmoret. Right. Not theirs. Right. Coming back to here. So in Sefer of Maccabees, it says it corresponds to Sukkot because they couldn't celebrate Sukkot. So that answers Sefer Chashmonim Maccabim. I'm saying there are a few different versions with different names. So it might be in Chashmonim and not in Maccabim. But it says over there that they couldn't celebrate Sukkot that year because they were busy fighting the war. So they established Chanukah corresponding to that. That's a theme we see there. Is there more of a connection? Anything I say more than that would be speculative. So you could speculate like I could speculate. There is room to think about a correlation between Sukkot and the nations and the idea that the ultimate war will be on Sukkot and the idea of Hanukkah, but that's already speculative. I don't have a source. I don't have an ancient source. Modern-day sources, but I don't know more than that.